You can listen to Issues Etc. live and on demand with the new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. You can get these apps at our website, issuesetc.org. Give us a call, send us an email, or follow us on Facebook or Twitter. Issues Etc. in the palm of your hand. The new Issues Etc. iPhone and Android app. Download today at issuesetc.org. There's an app for that.
And the Oscar goes to The Artist.
I want to say hi to my kids, and it's 6 in the morning in Paris, so you should go to bed in 30 seconds.
If George Valentine could speak, he'd say,
wow, putain, génial, merci, formidable, merci beaucoup, I love you.
When they called my name, I had this feeling I could hear half of America going, oh, no, oh, come on, why her again?
Thank you, Steven Spielberg, for changing my life. Thank you, Stacey Snyder, for changing my life. Please wrap up. I'm wrapping up. I'm sorry. I'm freaking out. Thank you, world.
Just some of the winners of this year's Academy Awards being announced and giving some of their acceptance speeches. That was a big to-do over the weekend. Of course, people still talking about the Oscars. Not so much the films, but they do talk about the Oscars as a media event itself. Joining us to talk about the winners of this year's Academy Awards, Brian Gadawa. He's a Hollywood screenwriter. He's author of several books, including Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment, and his latest publication, Noah Primeval, Chronicles of the Nephilim Book. Brian, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
They always talk about the Academy. I'd like to thank the Academy. What is the Academy?
I don't know. It's a secret. No. Well, of course, you know, the Academy is about, there's about 6,000 in it, and apart from the obvious cases of if you become a nominee or if you are a past winner, you are, of course, a member of the Academy. But I think the rest of them are remain rather private, so it's not all entirely known how. But I do get one thing that I found very interesting in light of this year's Best Picture Award was that the average, I've heard that the average age of the members of the Academy is 62, which is kind of interesting, and it sheds light again on which you know, movie won the Best Picture this year, because it has a lot of nostalgia for the older crowd, I think.
You have thought and written a lot about film. Do you think that the Academy Awards, the winners, actually reflect the quality of the art that's at work there?
Generally. Yeah, well, that's a pretty controversial question, because, I mean, you know, there's always, I think every year there's, you know, there's so many debates about it, but I would say that it's a mixture. I would say that Hollywood is sometimes surprising, sometimes not as monolithic as we tend to see it, and yet in other ways sometimes it is. You know, for example, oftentimes you'll see nominees, and I think this year was not all that different in terms of the movies that are often, you know, given honors, and particularly with the best film nominees and such, you know, they're often more expressions of the kind of interest that people in Hollywood have. So they're not usually the popular films. You know, you're not going to see the movies that make the gazillion dollars on there, and oftentimes nobody has seen them. And even after the awards, many people don't care to see them because they're just not interesting movies for the public. They tend to be more, more artistic, more focused on the interests of the art community, which is not really always very popular. However, we can't deny that, you know, there are years when certainly a very popular movie wins, whether it's, you know, Return of the King, you know, from Lord of the Rings, or like this case, I think the movie that won Best Picture this year, The Artist. Sure, it's about old Hollywood, it's about Hollywood, but it's about old Hollywood. It's about good old-fashioned romance. Of all those movies, it was the, in a very real sense, the simplest, most, you know, sort of, I don't know, traditional type romantic story, and with not the kind of complications that you see in a lot of these other movies with dysfunctional families like The Descendants or The Tree of Life, you know. And so in that sense, sometimes Hollywood surprises us, you know. So which I, you know, I'm grateful for, because sometimes the nominees are very political. You know, like you have a lot of movies that push the envelope of morality or the definition of family will often get accolades, but they don't always end up winning.
Now, let's talk about the artist a little bit. The most remarkable thing about it, I think, in this age of CGI, and basically every movie can show you anything you want to see, whatever you can imagine can go on the screen. It's a silent film in black and white. What does that say to you about Hollywood today?
Wow. Well, you know, actually, that again, I would say this year was a good year because of the fact that in Hollywood, in a very real sense, this wasn't a Hollywood film. It wasn't made through the typical Hollywood studio system because they would never believe that people would watch it. Who wants to see black and white? Nobody makes black and white movies anymore. Yes, an occasional artsy one that's really heavy, like Schindler's List, may get through, but even that took 10 years to get made. So Hollywood has pretty much decided that you can't do it with a black and white movie, even if it's artistic, and certainly not silent. And I think that it's been tried before. Other movies have tried and failed in terms of trying to make a silent movie work in the modern day era. In fact, I think just last year there was a foreign film that was done that way, or 2 years ago. But so my point here is that in a way this is a real strange, you know, the artist was a real strange combination of this Hollywood slash un-Hollywood, and I really like that because it really it brings us back to that older era of primal issues that we struggle with, finding meaning, losing our job, finding true love, these kinds of things, and in an old-fashioned context, you know, and yet at the same time it has a lot of those artistic elements, and it harkens back to an era that I think the older Academy members were probably in tune with. So, you know, it's like I said, it's not as monolithic as we think, and I think that this year's winner is a great expression of a good balance.
We'll talk about The Help a little bit later because one of the supporting actresses got her Academy Award for her performance there. But do you think that The Help could have been an equal contender to The Artist this year?
Yeah, I do. The Help was the story, based on a novel about, you know, and it was based on real experiences of, you know, Southern women during the time of the Jim Crow laws, I believe, and their struggle with the racism, or, you know, certainly with a society that's still discriminatory, even though we've been over, you know, past the slavery days and stuff, but it shows the culture, the Southern culture of women, and in both the black and the white worlds, and the, you know, in other words, those who have privilege and those who do not. But I think that it also was a very fair picture in terms of showing the good and the bad in both sides, and you know, showing reality such that, yeah, I absolutely think that if The Help would have won, it would have been a fine winner. By all means, and you know, I think a lot of reactions this year on The Help were very extreme. You either loved it or you hated it, you know. And I was one of the ones who really loved it, and so I thought it definitely deserved to win if it did.
You said it was a fair portrayal. Was the film that garnered leading actress through Meryl Streep, The Iron Lady, was it a fair portrayal of Margaret Thatcher?
Well, let me tell you. First of all, when I saw the movie, I could only get through half the movie because it was so boring. But I did think Meryl Streep was truly phenomenal, and I knew she was going to win. Every year, I pretty much know who's going to win, either the actress or actor, because they just seem to stand out when you watch them. And I'd seen almost all the movies. But anyway, yeah, she definitely deserved it. The movie itself was terrible, boring, and no one's going to watch it. But it was also very political. It was, you know, The Iron Lady was about Margaret Thatcher, who, of course, during the 80s, saved the world with Ronald Reagan. And she was very much of a conservative woman in a very liberal environment, and she actually brought Britain out of its poverty and socialist, malaise that was in. And she did it with tough love and, you know, tough conservatism and that kind of a thing. But this movie actually seeks to portray her more at the end of her life when she has been suffering with Alzheimer's. So they choose to show most of the movie is about her now kind of going crazy, talking to her dead husband that she's imagining. And unfortunately, that's really boring. It's really boring stuff, let alone being very political. So, Yeah, that movie was another strange irony of being very politically malicious to a great woman, yet at the same time, the performance was truly remarkable.
What about actor in a leading role, Jean Dujardin, who the film also won for Best Picture, The Artist?
Yeah, Jean Dujardin, quite a phenomenal actor. The artist we didn't mention. The artist was a black and white silent movie about the rise and fall of a man in the old Hollywood studio system, and how he meets a young starlet, or actually not a starlet, just by chance he meets some woman who sort of accidentally gets thrown into the Hollywood system, and she rises while he falls, and they have a romantic interest that sort of weathers through the years and grows to a very powerful romance. And yeah, you know, here's the thing about that. You know, what's so powerful about the silent film was here you have acting that really has to be completely through the eyes, through the face, and through the actions of the characters. And by the way, you know, I think that our acting today is just fantastically better than it was even back in the 30s. So I think actors are really brilliant now. Comparison. However, imagine taking away that ability to inflect words and give words and focus only on the visual and communicate that. And that's a really tough thing to do. And then put on top of that the fact that, you know, they're trying to harken back to the spirit of the old movie. So he has to kind of act a little bit over the top like they did back in that era. You know, they wanted to get the spirit of that age. So he really did quite a phenomenal job of playing a, you know, 30s or whatever time period it is, actor in the silent era, who is a little bit over the top as they were back then, but yet still pull out a performance that would make us, as a modern audience, still be drawn into it. And that's what was phenomenal about it.
Brian Godawa is our guest. We're talking about the winners of this year's Academy Awards on this Tuesday afternoon, February the 28th. Stay tuned. How does Jesus' incarnation provide us with a response to religious relativism? Find out in an article that I've written for the latest issues, etc. journal. It's titled God in a Box, and we'll send it to you for free. Just send an email to journal@issuesetc.org. You can also read about Pastor Michael Schuerman's journey from moralistic therapeutic deism to the rock-solid theology of the Reformation. The online Issues, etc. journal, journal@issuesetc.org.
Here are two new ways to stay connected to Issues Etc., Facebook and Twitter. You'll find photos of in-studio guests at facebook.com/issuesetc, and you'll find a list of upcoming topics and guests on Twitter at issuesetc. Social networking for the thinking Christian, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc. Connect with fellow Issues Etc. junkies today, facebook.com/issuesetc, and on Twitter at issuesetc.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We've got nothing against bumper stickers, just bumper sticker theology. And we'd like to send you an Issues Etc. bumper sticker. You'll find the Issues Etc. logo, slogan, and website address. Simply send your request to Lutheran Public Radio, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Please include a self-addressed stamped envelope. Good theology doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but you can tell people where to find good theology, the Issues Etc. bumper or window sticker.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a new charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. Or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I've been been hearing from our listeners about the iPhone and Android app for Issues, etc. In particular, what they like about it is the ability. Many of them have been devoted on-demand listeners for years. That means they're listening on demand via iTunes or some other means. And then now, with their iPhone or with their Android and the Issues, etc. app for either, that you can find free at our website, issuesetc.org, they suddenly find themselves being reminded every weekday at 3:05 Central that Issues, Etc. is about to come on the air, and they take the opportunity to listen live as well. We love our on-demand listeners. We love all of our listeners. Another way to listen and take Issues, Etc. in the palm of your hand, wherever you go, the Issues, Etc. iPhone app and Android app, find them at our website, issuesetc.org. We're talking about the winners of the Oscars. Brian Godawa, a Hollywood screenwriter, is our guest. One other thought on the artist before we leave it behind. It garnered 4 awards. One of them, usually kind of tucked away in the back, is musical score. Does it mean something more to win musical score Oscar for a silent film than it does for, say, one of the Lord of the Rings movies, where it's great, but it's not, you know, the story isn't being told through the musical score?
Well, you know, I actually think that the great scores are the ones that pull you in so much emotionally that you really almost don't notice them, which is sort of ironic because, you know, when they do a great job, you're not recognizing it because it's carrying you along and branding, giving you the emotion. But of course, if you recognize it, then you're removed, right? And then you're observing and you're not inhabiting the story, which is what great music does. So, ironically, I think if you don't recognize it while you're watching, you know, then it's better. But, you know, I would say that in this particular case, since there was no dialogue, then I think the score became very crucial that it did. You know, it was certainly more difficult, and a lot more was riding on the emotion of the story that was riding on the music because of that. So I think that in that sense it stands out. However, the past score winners, you know, whether it's been Lord of the Rings or what have you, I think they've all been fine and worthy, and I listen to them myself as music anyway. So, yeah, the musical score, I think, the fact that it won it is also a good testimony to why it won the Best Picture as well.
In the categories of supporting actor and actress, Christopher Plummer, you mentioned the average age of the Academy member. He kind of reflected that, a little older than the average age. He's in his 80s. Is this his first Oscar, or do you know?
I don't know.
He seemed to be kind of the representative of old Hollywood.
Yeah.
Maybe not as old as the artist, but old Hollywood in that sense. What are your thoughts on his role in The Beginners? I know nothing about this film.
Yeah, The Beginners is this sort of another, you know, dysfunctional family story, where Ewan McGregor is the son of Christopher Plummer. Christopher Plummer's wife dies, and shortly after he announces he's gay. He had hid it for 40 years, and so it's Ewan McGregor struggling with his father's, you know, and then he enters into this gay lifestyle and stuff. So that's another example of one of those, you know, very modern movies about romance that I think most people just aren't going to be very interested in. Christopher Plummer does a really brilliant job because he is playing this, you know, whatever, a 75-year-old gay guy, and he really, I would say he deserved the Oscar in that. I wouldn't say anyone else didn't, though, because they all were fine. Jonah Hill in Moneyball, Nick Nolte in Warrior, they were all really fine in their performances. So, but Christopher Plummer, yeah, and you know, most of us remember him as, of course, the father in Sound of Music. So, you know, I just love the guy, and I think most people do. He's one of those guys whose presence on the screen is always just electric. And I think Max von Sydow, who also was nominated, he is also in that same camp through the years. He's always had whenever his presence is on screen, he tends to electrify.
Octavia Spencer, obviously winning her first. She was overwhelmed by the win for her performance in The Help. What did you make of her in that film?
Yeah, that's another category where I felt that every one of the women were clearly equals in their performances. Jessica Chastain in The Help was just, as one of the white women, was just as equally as great as Octavia Spencer. But Octavia was really quite brilliant. She played sort of the black woman who's the maid, but who has an attitude, and she, you know, she doesn't like the discrimination. She doesn't tolerate it like some of the other people do. And so she pushes the envelope, and she fights back a little bit, and really brings a lot of humorous moments in the film as well. She's got a very humorous presence and very deserving, I thought, as well as the rest of them were.
Tell us about the film Hugo that won for cinematography.
Yeah, Hugo won for cinematography, and I think that it was a finely art-directed film. It also won for art direction, and it won for cinematography. This is one category, though. Having seen the other movies, I really thought it didn't deserve it. I mean, it was well done, but The Tree of Life was just truly an artistic masterpiece in terms of cinematography and art direction. However, Hugo won, and that's another thing too. You're talking to a guy who I am just not persuaded by that Martin Scorsese is a deserving a masterpiece director like people think of him. I don't like most of his stuff. I don't think he's a good storyteller. He does have some good visuals in his films. And like I said, Hugo was good, but it wasn't really great, and it wasn't really a very interesting film, and it was also about old Hollywood. But his stories tend to just fall apart and not have very much strength near the second half of the movie, and that's what I felt about Hugo. So, but I did see it in the 3D, and I did think that, you know what, he had a lot of fascinating angles and such. But if you get a chance to see The Tree of Life, definitely go see that, because it also has a spiritual theme to the movie that I think a lot of Christians would resonate with. And it is a lot more, Tree of Life is very contemplative. It's not very action-oriented. It's not got a strong story. Terrence Malick never usually does have a strong story. And I don't usually like Terrence Malick either. He's also an overrated director. He makes pretty pictures, but he doesn't tell good stories. However, in The Tree of Life, I felt that he did a little bit better in that area, and the theme of it was so powerful and beautiful, and I really connected with it.
What film do you think that may have been nominated or not got passed over that should have at least been nominated this year?
In Best Film, in terms of Best Film?
Yeah, Best Film.
Ooh, you got me on that one. I should have looked at my list of all the stuff I watched. I couldn't answer on that one. I mean, yeah, I couldn't. I mean, I was pleased with The Artist. I was pleased with The Help. I can't think of any other one.
Well, I must ask you before I let you go, because there's a film that's coming out next year that probably is, at least for geeks like me, and I think you fall into this category as well, one of the most anticipated films. That Jackson's going to put his hand yet again to try and do what we call nowadays the prequel of The Hobbit, the prequel to all of those very successful and just remarkable Lord of the Rings trilogy. What do you know about this film, and do you anticipate it being able to stand in the same category as those other three films?
I'm a big fan. I'm going to go see him. Totally, definitely excited about it. I'm not the kind of guy, though, who, like, you know, keeps up on all the details of where everything is at any moment, because I'm too busy for that. And I know that things go back and forth anyway, so, you know, one moment so-and-so starring it, the next moment they're not. So I kind of let them work out, and then when it comes out is where I really, my interest peaks. So unfortunately, I know there's a lot of fan sites dealing with it, so I think I've seen a couple of abstract trailers, so I don't really know a lot about it. But I am very excited because, obviously, I was a Lord of the Rings fan. My one concern is I believe they're doing it as two movies. Is that right? Do you know?
That's what I've heard, yes.
Yeah, and my only concern is just that, you know, look, even though I'm a fan of the Lord of the Rings, if I was not a fan of the Lord of the Rings, I probably would have been way too tired watching those movies, and I'm a little worried that The Hobbit might be in that category. Like, for instance, it's been really chic, and I think Lord of the Rings was one of the, you know, examples that I think encouraged this, where some of these other best-selling series, they pull out more movies out of the series. Like, for instance, the last Harry Potter movie, the last Harry Potter book was made into two movies. Big mistake. It was just way too long. It could have easily been in one movie and been fast-paced and interesting. But, you know, again, I know the Harry Potter fans probably loved it, but, you know, to me it was just too long and drawn out. Felt the same way about Twilight. You know, I'm a Twilight fan, and they're taking the last book and they're drawing it out into two movies, and it just makes it too long. So I do have a little bit of fear about that, in the sense of, as a just as a good, strong movie-watching experience. Just because you're a fan doesn't mean you deserve to just let things go on and not get to the point and keep the story moving. So I do have that sort of bias, and I'm a little worried about it. However, I do, you know, I did love the worlds that he created, and I love inhabiting those characters in those worlds, so I'll probably have a lot of patience with it.
Brian Goodow is a Hollywood screenwriter. He's author of several books, including Hollywood Worldviews, Watching Films with Wisdom and Discernment, and his latest publication, Noah Primeval, Chronicles of the Nephilim book. You can find out more about these books at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Brian, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Todd.
When we come back, it's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. this Tuesday afternoon, February the 28th. We're going to be talking with Adam Christing, a producer of a new documentary on Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism. And you may or may not know, Joseph Smith also had political aspirations. A little bit of a preview of things to come, perhaps. He ran for president. We'll find out a little bit more about Joseph Smith and his erstwhile run for president. Then we'll talk about two stories, one about the burning of Qurans at a military base in Afghanistan and also the new Syrian constitution. Dr. Alvin Schmidt will be our guest.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.